second, take your time. You know I'm yours if you remember that you're mine. And when everybody's telling me I have no...
Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 446, the special Sony Eats Shit episode. I'm your host, Mike Apps, Sony Sucks Shit, and with me as always...
David, Microsoft also sucking shit, McBurney, Family Mats.
And, your man in Japan, having experienced how certain other companies in America can suck it, Gaijima no Gatari.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer, and currently streaming live to the RP Gamer Twitch channel from my computer. That's why you're seeing my face instead of Wheels, and currently streaming the Super Metroid Link to the Past combo randomizer. I was told I did not have to play an RPG, but I figure, you know what, the site still covers Zelda games, and Metroid games are RPG adjacent. And this particular seed, I am Shantae when I'm in Super Metroid, and I am Adol when I'm in Zelda.
So you're telling me we could have been playing Overwatch on the official RP Gamer channel?
And well, I don't want to... I don't want to play that
actually
anymore,
I'm surprised that you haven't before.
Yeah. Well, this is Tam that I'm quoting here, so I don't know, maybe Pause would feel differently, but Tam said, you don't even have to stream an RPG. I was like, oh.
Yeah. Oh. So, let's rip the band-aid off.
Okay. Can I start ranting first?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay, so, in case you somehow haven't seen the swath of massive negative news, Sony announced last week a whole shitload of garbage. The big one is obviously
physical games.
Yes,
and spat in the middle of the eye.
Yes, the biggest one is obviously, hey, they're not going to do physical games for new games released after 2028. I'm going to give. Circle back to that in a second, because I have a lot to say about that. They also announced they're finally killing the PS3 and Vita digital stores, which is hilarious timing after announcing...
After decades.
But it's just hilarious timing after announcing, hey, we're going to kill physical media. Hey, look what else we can do.
Yeah,
we can make you repurchase all the games that you had for PS3 and Vita, but for PS5 now.
If we ever release them.
Not going to bother.
Yeah. Actually, that's a question. Can they rescind games? Like, or can they take stuff away? I remember...
Theoretically, they could. Like, they've never done so in the past.
Something with movies. Something had been done with movies that had been purchased, and...
Yeah, Studio Canal... Yeah, Studio Canal movies had been actively removed from users' accounts, with Sony basically saying, we don't care, you get no...
Yep.
Yeah, that's... I mean, is there any chance that that might end up happening with games?
Nothing that says it can't. They haven't done it yet, but it does raise the specter of, well, there's nothing that says they can't. And they have now done it with something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A hell of a thing to announce those two things in the same day.
That is like an incredibly unforced error. There is no reason to pair those announcements in the same press release. That was deranged.
Yeah.
Don't know what they were thinking doing that. But yeah, like those were announced at the same time. Which is, yeah, like... So some other context, contours of this information. Developers will be allowed to request reprint of games that have already released on disc after 2028. So, like, previous games are allowed to keep having disc, which makes this very specifically a choice made because they want discs to go away.
Yeah.
Like, this is specifically no new games are allowed to be on disc after 2028.
What really pissed me off about all of this is kind of the way it was framed as, hey, consumer preferences are changing. And we're kind of just going along with what consumer preferences are, which is
sort of just a lie, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of problems with that. Most notably, Blu-rays have been around for a long time. And notably, the first system with Blu-rays was the PlayStation 3, which, if my math is correct, came out, what, like 20 years ago?
Yeah. Years ago as 2006. Of November.
Yeah.
Which means essentially been on the same disc format for 2 decades. And they have...
Based on 4K Blu-rays are an adjacent technology, but yeah.
And they've improved it maybe slightly since then.
They've increased the number of layers you can fit on a disc.
Yeah. The read speeds are also not great.
Oh yeah, the read speeds have never really picked up, and that hasn't helped.
Yeah, but essentially them and Microsoft also have actively made physical media the worst option for a long time. And this is before we even get to, hey, we're releasing games that aren't actually on the disc.
You will find out when someone posts about it online.
Yes. Yes, and that, and yes, there was also the time where they weren't even disclosing that, which is cost me $60 because I bought a copy of Indiana Jones for Xbox and did not find out until later. There ain't nothing on that disc.
That one is, like, the Microsoft ones are still utterly deranged because they are, like, essentially key disc on...
Yeah.
On Xbox and PS5 and actual on cart for the Switch 2. Completely, like, backwards world in life. Like, because it's the same with Oblivion for some reason. Because that's like a 120 gigabyte install, only 20 gigabytes on the disc.
Yeah. But, you know, what was I going to say? Like, before we even got to any of that, like, discs were very slow to install from, and combined with often large patches day one, which I think a lot of time were the size of, like, the actual game install. So just a bad physical format combined with bad patching systems resulted in physical media on those, particularly those systems, being god-awful for a long time. So the idea that this decision is based on consumer sentiment is because you have actively created the situation and
it's
made your physical media
prophecy.
Actively awful for a long time, presumably for the end game of being able to control all sales and not have to produce any of this shit, which is ultimately probably going to lead to fewer sales for us, the consumer, than we enjoy now.
Such is C-suite capitalism.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is just that, you know, we all know that with the PS4 and Xbox One, that's when they told us, oh, you have to install the entire game to your hard drive, you know, because the transfer speeds weren't fast enough.
Yes, there's also that.
And I was also going to say that a few years ago, I remember reading an article, and it was talking about how we would have to, like, further innovate or invent a whole new storage medium if we ever wanted to go to 8K media, and I, you know, and so basically the 4K Blu-ray discs have higher capacity, and even now there are some games that are 2 discs, you know, if you buy them physically, like FF7 Rebirth, and there's a question about that in the chat, but basically, like, yeah, the article was just saying we don't have storage capacity to have 8K Blu-ray discs, basically. And so here we have it. Sony's basically saying, oh yeah, we invented Blu-ray, but, you know, we can't go any further with it, so now, tough shit, just all digital.
I mean, it didn't even have to be Blu-ray. It could have been anything else. Like, I mean, this is a problem to me here. You look at the Switch, which, yes, granted, even on the Switch 2, generally speaking, those are smaller installs. I will grant that. But the same move to digital is not happening as much on Switch. And honestly, we don't really even have a breakdown of what those sales are. When they say this is the split between digital and physical sales, are the digital sales including things like DLC and games that don't exist physically, or are we getting like the true picture one-to-one? I think who the hell knows? But regardless, on Switch, it is pretty close to 50-50.
I mean, something I would be interested in seeing is what's the split, for example, Animal Crossing New Horizon. There you could actually see what the split is between physical and digital copies, because it was such a thing back in 2020. So,
I bet it's actually close to this, despite, you know, the fact that we couldn't go anywhere when that game launched, pretty much.
That it was available immediately on digital is one of the things that made it super successful.
Yeah. But despite that, I bet if we looked at the lifetime sales, it's probably pretty close.
Yeah, that's why I was suggesting just choose that one game. And
yeah.
If anything is a good indicator, it would be New Horizon.
Unfortunately, we don't have any detailed data, so who knows? But what we can see is that when there is a physical medium where you can actually just put the game in and play, it is actually still quite successful. And I see a lot of I don't have numbers, but I see a lot of anecdotal evidence from this. If you look at like the boutique physical publishers, you'll routinely see like the Switch version sell out, and like PS4, PS5, whatever versions not necessarily seem to sell as much.
I remember reporting on this for an AQuest before in the past, where I just would go to an electronics store here and see what I could find of the PS4 and PS5 sections, and very often I couldn't find a PS5 section at the electronics store. it was at the end of the PS4 shelf was a couple PS5 games. Things like that.
So there's two things I want to...
I think at that time I was actually trying to find any evidence that the Xbox had any sales in this country. I found some digital money cards. That was it.
Wow. So
yeah, and that was 5.5 years ago.
Yeah. So there's a few things I want to point out. One is that in general, like, the attempt has been made to the numbers in favor of digital, because one, it justifies the decision, and two, digital is just more profit.
Yep.
Don't have anywhere near as much of a profit split, and you can have much more control over prices. Like, people will point it out time and again for the obvious reason that it's the case, but like, you know, digital things on digital storefront can go on deep sale, and they do constantly, but like, as a function of just like sitting in the digital store, if they're not on sale, they are basically always at full price. Permanent digital price drops are much rarer. Whereas if it's sitting on a store shelf, the store eventually wants to get rid of it. And they, like, the price is lowered accordingly. There's all sorts of incentives around that that I'm not privy to, but like, broadly, you know, there are pressures to move that don't exist in digital. And that allows you to like see something that like no person in their right mind is paying $70 for, sitting at $70 for years. I was listening to Digital Foundry's podcast where they were reacting to this, and they brought up the example of Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater. That's a $70 video game on PSN store. No right-minded human being is buying $50 when they could just go to Amazon and purchase it for like $25.
Yeah.
Like the elimination of alternative, if you're like selling digital codes through Amazon, like the impetus to jump copies becomes much less, because like that's the thing that they're saying. Like, you can still release a physical box of a PS5 game, but it will always be code and box after 2020. Like, the impetus there to shift copies is going to go down. Like, there's just a lot of, like, downward pressures on the price that go away. The other thing is just, like, you know, we talk about, like, how the statement that they're making at the start is predicated on the notion that consumers just don't want physical games that much anymore is just a nonsense statement, because when digital was a tiny section of the market, they didn't say, well, that didn't work, time to get rid of it. Like, they were like, well, there's a segment of the market that wants this, and now that it's the majority of the market, like, it's nonsensical to say time to get rid of it, because the actual numbers just don't, like, bear out, because it's like, oh, it's a much smaller portion of the market. How much? Like, 20%. Like, the very grimmest numbers are still 1 in 5. And, like, when you get into, like, big game, like, say, again, I'll pull from the example that Digital Foundry used, Resident Evil 9. That was a game that, like, came out and sold out in physical. Like, that became briefly a game that was on back order physical, because plenty of people bought it physical, which is saying something, because it's a game that sold like 5 million copies in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people still definitely buy these. There's no indication that simply no one wants this choice.
Damn it.
This is not a negligible segment of the market, and it doesn't, like, the flip side of this is that, and my actual thought process is, Sony just, like, you know, Sony and Microsoft and, like, you know, probably some elements of Nintendo want this to go away. They like, and so at some point you make a business decision to make it go away. You hope you can get away with it. That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not an organic, like, it just doesn't make sense to keep making these. These still sell well enough that they do. I think they're concerned that they're never going to sell so little that they don't make sense. So they want to get rid of them when it looks the most likely. Most likely they can argue that they don't make
sense. Yeah.
Yeah. The, you know, because, like, obviously there's a lot of market pressure to make them not make sense. Make them, like, make it a reasonable choice. You know, that's, I mean, it's grim, but I mean, like, hit everything else. Like, companies love to try to make something happen if they think that, like, the very notion of putting Blu-ray into the PS3 was doing that. It's like, make this happen, regardless of how much it, like, pisses people off, it happened. Steam became a big juggernaut because you couldn't play Half-Life 2 without downloading it. And so the thing was done to make it happen. Like, over and over, companies will find a way to make things happen. And in this case, the thing they want to find a way to make happen is physical goes away so that the consumer has less bargaining power. Like, you know, no first sale doctrine applies, because maybe the EU will fight for it, but, you know, in this case, what you will get is the European Union will, within its borders, you will be able to, like, some sort of refund power. They will not extend that any further than they are required to. But yeah. So this is just sort of the way it all unfolds, is, you know, take this chance while you think you got it, because it looks better on the bottom line. And ultimately, it's like all of these decisions, it's deeply short-sighted. Like,
mm-hmm.
The thing, like, you know, when you get a company ship that, like, purely looking at P&L, profit and loss, they'll see this as like, oh, this makes less money, why are we in this business? And it loses sight of intangibles, it loses sight of the fact that, like, customer goodwill is not measurable in profit and loss. And when you're, like, third parties have a lot of incentives to care less about that. First parties need goodwill. They need the things that make less on paper money that cause consumers to think about the platform and to continually come back. And, like, I'll be ranting about that more when we get to the other half of this trash sandwich week. But, yeah, that's where we're is that, like, you know, Sony has in the past, you know, all of them have, to some extent or another, been in the past few years in their extraction phase. As we've watched the place start to collapse, as we've known it, it's the answer has moved on their balance sheets to the market we have, how do we extract as much money from them as possible? And that's why you saw, if you were paying attention to Sony's, like, fiscal reporting, a few years ago they talked about how they were moving away from talking about units sold, despite the PS5 still selling very briskly, to monthly active users. They were moving to how to, like, increase the number of continual players who are constantly and that was related to their live service push, obviously. But it's also related to the fact that, like, we've just kind of seen the extent of how many people purchase dedicated video game consoles. A high-selling dedicated video game console, the existing markets that they can sell in, sells about 150 million. Incredible numbers, very profitable, if done, you know, if you haven't, like, pissed down your leg. But, you know, that is the extent to which you can monetize purely based on selling hardware. So they have moved into, if we want to continue growing, we need to be extracting more money out of the people that purchased them. Because, you know, we don't want to make the system, we don't want to make the sacrifices that would be necessary to make the systems cheaper to sell them in large countries, but with developing economies, or which might have difficulty selling, you know, your places like China or India, like these enormous, like, places, but they have developing economies or strong controls in place that make selling consoles there hard. And Sony's tried to move into China, especially, but, you know, there's limited success. PC is kind of the standard there because it's a combination of factors that aren't worth getting into. Or at least they're worth getting into, but I'm not expert enough to get into them. But broadly speaking, like, you know, getting into these markets that would theoretically expand the install base heavily would require making a lot of changes to the business, would require maybe taking losses or producing hardware that would not be as to cease interoperability. A lot of different factors that prevent these. So, like, we're at the extraction stage. This is in, like, rich developed economies. These are the amount of people that we can sell this to. We want to keep growing. We draw money out of them. And so that's where we're at. And one of the ways you do that is youth games go away, capacity to haggle down prices in via, like, third-party mechanisms go away. So that per unit profits go up. But ultimately, like, what these all do is that, like, they kind of throw out the concept of price discrimination. Like, you know, a lot of people buying a game wait until it's cheaper because they don't care about it at full price, or at least not enough. Like, see this argument done a lot with piracy, the idea that, like, that, you know, it's incorrect to tie one-to-one a pirated unit with a lost sale. And I think that sometimes people will go a little too far with that argument and say that, like, no one who pirated would have ever been a purchasing user. But there is, like, a point where that, you know, like, everyone has their sort of horizon of price where it's like, okay, that's the price I can accept. Like,
it's actually kind of similar to, like, bicycle theft prevention in Japan, where it's like, if somebody really wants to take your bike, they're going to take your bike, but all you have to do is make sure that it is just inconvenient enough that they don't.
Yeah. Make it inconvenient?
That's the kind of thing with piracy versus everything else. Is like, piracy only becomes really widespread when you make it harder to get the thing in the first place. in one way or another. It could be price, it could be format, it could be what they're doing right now with physical sales.
Most assuredly. And like that's kind of the thing, is that like in that same area there's price. Like a lot of people just, you know, like especially as games get more expensive, people like their bulking becomes more commonly read. Like a lot of people you know, there's a reason that even though a couple of games have hit 80, we have seen a few games threaten to go to 80 and then dial back to 70, because like 70 is already past the bulking point of a lot of people. Yep. 80 goes is past the bulking point for basically everyone except except in the case of extraordinarily popular games. Like there's a reason that the big $80 games are Mario Kart World and Grand Theft Auto 6. Like those are two games that like routinely sell tens of millions of copies year after year after year. They can get away with that, but
did Fire Emblem get away with that? We're gonna see.
Fire Emblem.
So Fire
Emblem is not 80.
Fire Emblem is 80 physical, 70 digital.
Okay.
I wouldn't know. I got the collector's edition.
Well, yeah. That's 120.
So to wheels, that's a $200.
No, it's not 200. It's not 200.
No, I'm joking. but thing is, the Fire Emblem is them testing this with a game that doesn't sell tens of millions year after year after year, has a dedicated fan base that will just swallow. Can we get away with that? And they have their back door of like, well, if you don't want to do that, you can always get the digital one. That's dollars cheaper. Like, that's their carrot and stick. Because, you know, all of them like this, but you know, eventually Fire Emblem, Nintendo's math is always going to be fuzzier because they don't drop prices regardless. Like things will go on sale, they never drop in price. Like their physical games just don't. So they're always going to be a little trickier. And then of course you've got like, and at this point I think they're factoring into their budgeting the way that Walmart and Amazon are price matching physical to digital. That, you know, like if someone is a dedicated player, that they won't feel the sting as badly if they, you know, just grab one of the big box retailers that will price match to digital. Which exists only up until the game actually releases. It is only a pre-order. That's been a fascinating market dynamic by itself. But we've seen some science experiments being done to try to see what is the most that we can charge before consumers go into revolt. Ultimately, and I'm gonna I need to let Wheels have a few more rants about Sony before I slip into Microsoft, because there's a lot of adjacent problems happening that are like causing all of these. But yeah, like this is ultimately part of a continuing pattern of extractive business practice. Like you have the locked in audience and you just push and push and push.
In stage.
Sucks.
You continue your round.
Before we do that, Fireminer has a wealth of comments I think we should do while we're in the same space.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So let's go through some of these. The thing with Sony ending making discs is that there were rumors a few years ago already, but people thought a little bit given Sony's monopoly on the Blu-ray disc manufacturing and such. But there is news that Sony went to turn their disc factory into making optical micro lenses, which are important parts for... you guessed it, AI denoiders and automobiles. So we can add another thing to the kill tally of this AI bubble. Jesus Christ. I don't even want to. Let's not touch that particular topic at all tonight, because we already have enough to complain about.
Yeah, we'll be going back to that week after week.
And move on.
There have been research about discs that can hold way more data than Blu-rays. There isn't any information about how quick the read speed of these things will be, but I'm old enough to get used to installing games from discs to the hard drive, and it still beats having to re-download the games and then install it, which is a good point, because lots of people still have mediocre internet, and that does not seem like a thing that's improving very much.
Many of those places, it just isn't profitable to serve, so they never...
One of the founders of Lunar Games recently said that the boutique publishing market has become completely saturated and it'll be suicidal for any company to enter the market now. Call me pessimistic, but I question if the demands will increase after what Sony did. I mean, like I said, I have no data to back this up. I still think a lot of the money those boutique publishers are making is from Switch. But yes, I think people will certainly, there might be more demand for games that, you know, are released physically after this news. So we'll see what happens. There may be a lot of people buying PS5 and PS4 discs from those publishers the next 2 years. Would the news from Sony hit less hard if people could buy digital games on PlayStation on different platforms, and these platforms were forced to give away discounts to compete with each other? Because that is how people got over at the end of PC games on discs. They have Steam, GOG, etc.
Like all the things that sell you Steam in third-party fashion. I think that, like, there would still be a visceral reaction to it.
Yeah.
But I do also think that, like, the reaction after that gut punch would be less ugly, because, like, when you start thinking about things beyond the how, like, rough and wrong footing it feels to not actually have any kind of, like, for them to be selling boxes with nothing in them, you get to the fact that, like, oh, there's, like, they're already in the process of being litigated from, like, 5 different countries for, like, the fact that there's just no form of competition around PSN. Like, if there was the capacity for like, third-party storefronts to, like, price compete against each other, it probably would assuage at least, like, a significant amount of the bad feelings for people that aren't like us, who are, like, diehard physical crazy.
To some extent. But on the flip side of that, I don't think it's a different market. I don't think physical was every. I think that's a market that's kind of pre-built for digital. Like, even the old days, a lot of games you'd install and enter a license key and then.
That is true. Like, part of the reason that people were ready to see the end of physical PC games is that, like, for, like, 15 years, publishers had made it miserable to play them.
Yes.
Best example is Diablo 2. You needed that goddamn license key to play online. If you lost it, too freaking bad, you know?
Yeah.
That's not even close to the worst example you could come up with.
Okay.
But,
like, I we all need to remember the days of, like, Securom and Starforce that might just, like, can break your PC in some fashion.
Yeah. But, I mean, just in general, once we got into, like, Windows gaming, like, the idea of being able to run a game off disk kind of wasn't a thing. Whereas that continued on.
Your hard drive and try to forget about it.
Yeah, where that continued on in console gamers, and a lot of people enjoy that. And personally, me, with prices of storage media going through the roof, being able to buy
also a Switch, the worst thing about
yes being able to buy a Switch 2 game that I can just put in the system and play is kind of awesome, to be honest.
It's another reason that this is, like, a truly deranged time to make this announcement is,
yeah,
like, storage is so expensive that Microsoft just removed the ability to purchase a 2 terabyte Xbox.
Yeah.
went away. Like, you can only get the 1 terabyte now because storage is that expensive, and now you're telling me that in 2020, you both believe that AI is going to be huge in 2028, and also that everything has to be on my home storage? With this internet? No. Nah.
Yeah. No. All right, let's get through some of these, and then I'll complete rant. Gaijin comment on Japan's bike theft prevention. Should de novo and other server-side DRM measures be considered inconvenient enough? Most people like GAIG's DRM-free model and think that it's ideal, but how many publishers can accept it? I can only name a few studios that have publicly supported DRM-free, like Running with Scissors Post.
it's one of those things that's nearly unfalsifiable because most companies won't even consider it, so we can't have, testing.
Just looking at Steam and the way Steam operates with its store, it's not the best way of going around it, but it's significantly less bad than most other online stores, so that's kind of how Steam is succeeding at this point.
Except it's still the other... some games on Steam will still have that extra DRM.
But again, that's on the publisher, not on Steam itself.
Right.
True. The other thing I'm going to say, like, relating to making things inconvenient is, like, every so often you'll see, like, a news article, like, X patched out, this game had Denuvo patched out, and it's like, yeah, they patched it out because it did what it was supposed to do. It made it hard to steal the game for 6 months. Like, Denuvo is a continuing, like, service that, like, you pay, like, it's an ongoing service that the company ultimately decides to cease using for titles which are no longer considered to be in their initial sales rush. Eventually, the company, like, stopped paying for Denuvo for that title and cut it out. Make it inconvenient for 6 months and then move on. Like, that is what they're doing. But yeah, continue down the list.
Okay, people find whatever reason they can to justify the purchases, especially purchases at a lower cost than MSRP. That said, what do you think about the argument that because buying games digitally actually means purchasing a license to play the game, some people will only ever buy digital games when they're on a discount?
Plenty of people only purchase digital games on a discount because they, you know, for people like us, they feel less real. So, like, well, I'm not paying, like, you know, the convenience of being able to play that is worth something, but not so much that I don't want to, that I'm going to buy it, but that I'm going to buy it at full price. Like, you know, for certain things, like, plenty, but, you know. It's also just because, like, people have gotten used to the idea. Like, because the game feels less tangible to a certain set, we don't buy it at full price. We treat it as, like, as disposable, like the same way that you get impulse purchases sitting next to the fucking, like, checkout register at a grocery store. But at the same time, like, you'll see plenty of people that are just sort of used to buying digital objects and do buy them at full value, like, all the time. I think that some of that is, like, generational. But on the third hand, it's just, like, this is... Like, it's hard, because, like, it's also just the way that, like, if you're... exposure to digital is the PC market, and, like, there's always, like, some more and more shady CD PC site to, like, buy from. Like, yeah, why would you'd be a sucker to buy at full price? Mm-hmm. So there's, like, a pile of, like, intervening incentives there. Still more?
One more, and then I'll get back to ranting. There are researches about when people go to a store, touch the merchandise, and talk to the sellers, they're willing to pay more than what they'd had spent online. We're talking about gamers. How much does the physical existence of a game at a retailer anchor its $60 or more price tag? When you go to Walmart or Best Buy or a specialist game store, do you ever look up the review of a game and dissect it before making the decision? Yes, I do. Thank you for asking.
psychopath who did that before. But
hey, random anecdote. While
while
getting rid of about half of my PS5 collection at GameStop today, one of the employees there who I know at this point, because I'd like to just go shop for games even if I don't buy anything. This goes way back to COVID when we were finally able to go out again, and I was losing my mind and eventually just started going to random GameStops, not even to buy things, just to preserve sanity. Anyway, I was there getting one of those games, and he was looking for an Xbox game I was getting. I'll get back to why I was buying Xbox games in a minute during the rant. But he pulls out a collector's edition of No More Heroes 3 for Xbox. I asked how much it was. He said $20. And I'm like, well, fuck.
I'd have done it.
Clearly you know me, and yes, I picked that up. But that is hardly the only example I could think of going into a store and just looking at a game and saying, this looks neat, let me look up reviews, or asking someone about a game, or just having a conversation with an employee about, you know, what games we like and coming across something cool. Honestly, that's one of the many things I'm scared of losing if everything goes all digital. Although maybe I can still go into a store and talk to other people about codes and boxes, I guess. I don't know.
I do want to briefly dissect that, though. One of the things physical does that digital has neither capacity nor clear desire from platform holders to, which is to say, digital, like when you're on a digital store shelf, you are competing with everything else that is ever released on that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, like, you know, the front page theoretically helps to push specific things so that, like, new things can make its way on. But, like, ultimately, if you're successful, you find your way onto the page and you stay on there and you get more successful. If you're unsuccessful, slip off that front page and you disappear into the void of thousands and thousands of other items. With physical, there is a logistical limit to how much stuff you can put in front of someone's eyes. Things cycle out. You are competing with what else is on the shelf. And that's actually important. It is important that there be times where you are not competing against everything in human history. You'll see these like things that get bandied around. That's like, Capcom says that 56% of its sales are PC games. Like, yeah, it's people buying like Devil May Cry 4 on Steam for $2.
Yeah.
It's like in a game that is now legally an adult that is being sold for nothing. That's just the nature of the digital storefront. And, like, why you'll see companies like doing these things, like they'll put out a Switch or Switch 2 version like 6 months down the line, and honestly not even advertise it that much, because like to them, the initial boost of sales is nice. Really what they want is the continuous trickle of like mining the back. Like, it does make it hard for like anyone or anything new to break in. Like, you don't have that like pile of back catalog titles, so you know you're at the mercy of getting that initial hit. And you know, if you aren't already a big company that has that million games on the service already, don't have leverage to get yourself onto the front page, and so you never get on the front page. You sell 200 copies to a dedicated fan base of 7 freaks on Steam. and then, you know, go back to, you know, your job as some sort of, like, data analyst or something, I don't know. But, obviously indie games were never finding their way onto the store shelves, but, you know, you look at, like, these smaller publishers, like, you know, in, say, a digital world, does, like, I'll take an example of a company that was old, but not exactly lighting the world on fire at the time that it had its big breakout. Does a digital world version Demon's Souls ever blossom into Elden Ring?
No.
I don't know. Yeah,
I don't think so.
And part of that is that, like, it's harder to word of mouth that. There's when you're competing with everything else in existence. Like, you need those things that just sort of, like, come onto the shelf, and they only have to compete with 100 things instead of 100,000 things. You know, it's digital and physical both have extreme downs, like extreme problems with them. And so the best of world we can have is one where you get access to both, so that, like, it's less likely that something disappears forever, or, you know, because, like, that, you know, you'll get the digital thing where they disappear forever, or we can remember the bad old days where it was impossible to get an Atlas game unless you pre-ordered, because it would just disappear. I've mentioned it before, but I remember the time when I bought Shin Megami Tensei Devil Summoner, a DS game where I picked up my pre-order from GameStop, and they pulled it out from the, desk drawer underneath the counter, underneath the, like, sales section. They were just like, good thing you pre-ordered, we only got this. Like, that was the bad old days of physical only. And now we're looking at the bad new days of digital only, where it's just like, oh, like, that company, like, their library transferred, and the new company that owns them doesn't want to honor the existing purchase, and I guess, you know, Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo doesn't care, and it just goes away. Or, like, the license, like, one of those things that you see a lot, like, the license to this expired, and now you just can't play it anymore. Like, my personal favorite bugbear of, like, this is stupid. Fucking two of Sega's best arcade games, Afterburner Climax and Outrun 2006 Coast to Coast, which were released on Xbox Live Arcade and PSN back in the 360 and PS3 days, and then just disappeared because of licensing of real-life aircrafts and a single, like, Ferrari Testarossa. Incredibly stupid. No one was playing Outrun because it had a Ferrari.
Sadly, everything you said about indie games also applies to indie authors.
You should tell us more.
Yeah. Oh.
Plug.
I do have a new book coming out on Thursday. So. And it's the one that has me cussing out small press publishers. Yeah, that was the publisher who kind of ghosted me for an entire year. After waiting about 6 months for a reply to a deadline that I had met and I had submitted for, and with some advice from people who actually deal with corporate speak, just coming up with an email that said, please, we definitely need to talk about this, and then calling for a curing period, as was actually listed in the contract, finally got a response from this publisher, literally 51 weeks after the last time I had heard from them.
Incredible.
saying, sorry, no, we checked our lawyers, you don't have the right to call a curing period. And then basically calling me a really awful person for, you know, being up front and saying we need to talk about stuff. And so second email was, okay, yes, sure, but no, obviously we need to talk about stuff. It has been 6 months since I turned in something for a major deadline and you never even got back to me on it. And it's like,
you didn't even confirm submission.
Did not even confirm submission. And they were like, well, you also said that you were going to look over the edits from the first manuscript. And so obviously it's your fault that you never actually got back to us on this thing, even though we never talked to you again. And I would like to point out that the editing file that they sent me for this first manuscript was not only a massive hack job of why is this even being commented on, with several suggestions that were grammatically and narratively demonstrably incorrect, it also went up to page 52 of a 154-page document.
It just looks, for all the world, entirely incomplete.
Yeah. So, it's like, yeah, I never really got back to you on the edits because you never sent me the full editing file.
Was I supposed to do?
Yep, so this was like, so yeah, second email to them is like, yes, obviously we have things that we need to talk about and we have about 15 days left of this curing period. And their second response to was, well, we can just do the edits ourselves without your input and then publish it.
Lovely.
At which point I seriously started looking into literary legal representation.
Reasonable choice.
Yep. And after several weeks, because it was like the middle of summer vacation and lawyers are busy people too, got somebody to look fully over the contract and over all correspondence and write this publisher a lovely letter saying, yes, well, according to Section 15 of the contract and Section 19 of the contract, you are in breach at least 3 times. twice for not fulfilling their own deadline for getting back to me on stuff. And once for, I did have the right to call for a curing period, and their refusal to go with it was another breach of contract. So that was the first notification termination of contract. It took 2 notifications for them to stop talking to me again. So honestly, at this point, it's been, let's see, November. It has been 9 months at this point, and I have not heard back from them again. It's just kind of really, really a dumb situation. Yes. They even at one point they were like, oh, you can buy, so you need to buy the rights back from us, and then they never gave me a price quote.
Love like, it.
Yeah, at this point, their official response for the 2 manuscripts on deadline was that these manuscripts failed to meet their, criteria. The criteria is never listed anywhere. I have no idea why it does not meet anything. I'm like, yeah, we're just taking this as a full termination of contract. Goodbye. And anyway, so that the first in this set of 3 books I was supposed to be writing for this publisher is going up on Thursday. I have no idea if it will sell at all. I am terrible at putting myself out there, and nothing ever seems to work in any case. As witness the fact that I have somehow managed to fail to properly advertise a lit RPG novel on a lit RPG discussion group page for the past year and a half. Somehow. Yeah. So, yeah. It's, but it is going to be published, or it is going to be on sale. I actually got an ISBN number for it. It is as official as I can make it, and if Scarsdale Publishing decides to try and publish it themselves, they will find that Amazon will be flagging them for plagiarism.
So,
yeah, but as far as I know, actually, I have not checked to see if they still have me on the upcoming authors list or not. Well,
to learn.
I'd rather not do anything dealing with them ever again. In any case, I need to be getting back to work soon. But anyway, so yes, so the book is Monsters Among Us, Teenage Wasteland by Michael Spearwater, Spearwater, because this one's got enough violence, murder, and lots of cussing to make me really want to have it under a different name than the middle grade fantasy series. And it is currently available for pre-order. Nobody has pre-ordered, and will be on sale on Thursday. So, thank you.
Be the first.
Yeah. Stick it to the man, or at least to the really, really awful, incompetent people running Scarsdale Publishing. Because I'm not even the first person this has happened to, apparently, because I was able to get in contact with another person who had officially left, broken off with them, and she had a very similar experience, except hers managed to drag out for 5 years.
Oh, dear Lord.
Jeez.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they have actually published stuff, that's why I can't say that they're fraudulent, but discussion of buying back publishing rights really felt more like a ransom demand. Especially considering how little was actually done with the material that I know of. Because they never talked to me. Anyway, yeah, I have class starting in about 25 minutes. So, yeah. So yes, yeah. Please purchase it. Please stick it to them. And
show them
go ahead, wrong. Please.
Yeah. Also true. There's plenty of good things there.
Yes. And eventually I will just have enough sheer volume out there that somebody will notice, I hope. But, yeah. Okay, anyway, I really need to get going. So,
I'm about to.
Go on ahead and keep trashing Sony and Microsoft and everyone else. Have fun. Did anyone see the bit where the French government has decided to completely switch over to an Ubuntu operating system for all government countries?
German states did that. It's glad to hear that France is doing it as well.
It's start off with somebody in the World Court or something like that. They were going ahead with an investigation into war crimes for Benjamin Netanyahu, and the lead investigator in this commission found all of his Gmail and other Google related stuff cut out.
I remember.
Yep. So apparently on the behest of somebody in the Trump administration, possibly. Anyway, yeah, so because of this, France is completely shutting out all Microsoft products on government machines now. Sweet. By the end of August. Yep. Under the explicit reasoning of eliminating a security issue. Being Windows itself the security issue. Somebody's not going to be happy with that. Anyway, okay.
Windows still sucks!
Yes.
Okay, let's run down the rest. We'll finish your ranting.
Okay. Later. Bye-bye.
Later.
See ya.
Okay, so I'm going to try and... what am I saying? So let's just go back to when this announcement was made and just kind of go over some of the shit I went through on that day and the following days. Namely that as soon as someone parried the now infamous E3 video of Sony humorously displaying how to share their games with other people. As soon as someone parried that, I instantly bought that product, and that those people were Evercade. So I have an Evercade on the way.
I'm a nerd.
I thought about getting one of those, but I already have all the ROMs on my computer, so who cares?
I don't like playing emulators, so I'm excited for this.
Yeah. There's a lot of shoot 'em up collections on there that look cool.
There's shoot 'em up collections. I got a Legacy of Kain collection. I ordered, even though I have it on Switch, Tomb Raider, just because, I don't know, why not? I'm looking at some other stuff for there, but... And I also pre-ordered their newer system that's coming out later this year. It's a nicer portable. But whatever. I almost sold my PS5, I'm not going to lie. It was something that entered my mind and I probably would have instantly regretted, because there are still some PlayStation games that I can only play on that I would regret losing access to. But I certainly instantly canceled PSN. I certainly got rid of a stack of PlayStation 5 games today. And along with my PlayStation Portal, which I have... If you've listened to the show, you've heard me say how cool it was. But yeah, that's gone. I switched some PlayStation copies over to some Xbox, because yes, they both suck ass, but I still prefer to play them on an Xbox. And now that the systems are going up in price, I have an Xbox Series X and still have my Xbox One X. So if the Series X goes to shit, there were a few games that I would like to have. A few games that specifically you could still play on Xbox One. That I want copies of instead of PS5. And yeah, I used all that trading credit for physical Switch games. So Sony can suck my ass. But yeah, this will, unless something changes, this is the final PlayStation console I want.
Yeah, well, I was going to chime in before...
Go ahead.
Actually, now I'm playing Contra, just in case you're wondering. It's not an RPG. I don't give a crap. But anyways, yeah, I was going to chime in before just that. A while back, you probably heard me say this, I was like, well, I haven't bought a physical Xbox Series X game in a long time. I got Metaphor because I wanted the collector's edition, and the PS5 version was sold out at the time. But I had kind of made up my mind. I'm like, okay, I don't think I want to buy any more physical Series X games. I said, and if a digital game is Play Anywhere and at a steep discount, then I'll buy it. So I ended up getting a good deal on Doom Dark Ages, Oblivion Remastered. They're Play Anywhere, so if my Series X breaks, I don't have to buy another one for $800. I can just play the PC versions, which are still Microsoft Store, but you know, your achievements carry over, cloud saves and all that. But here's the thing, though. During the Steam Summer Sale, Indiana Jones was on sale for $42. I'm not willing to pay $70 for a digital game. Why on earth would I do that? Unless it's Pokemon Pokapia. But, so what I found out, though, is that on the Steam version of Indiana Jones, you can sign into your account, and you can just download your Xbox cloud save, and then all the achievements popped, and I'm like, oh, okay, so I didn't even need to get the first party games, right? Because like Avowed does that too. Avowed is another game where on Steam you can access your cloud save from Xbox. So just in case anyone's wondering, you can still play your Microsoft first party games. Let's say you started playing something on Game Pass, you should check to see if the Steam version will let you download those saves. I would recommend doing that if you're angry at Microsoft, you know. But I'd kind of made up my mind. I'm like, okay, great. I still want to collect PS5 physical games. And now it's like, son of a bitch. Like, I had made up my mind that I didn't want the PS5 Pro because it's too expensive. And I figured, oh, I'll get the PlayStation 6 and then all of my physical games will get those enhancements. Great. No. So it's really looking like the PlayStation 6 could be over $1,000 and not include a disc drive. When the PS5 came out, it was $500, but I was able to sell my PS4 Pro, right, to mitigate that cost. I'm like, well, gee, if the PlayStation 6 is $1,000 and I need to keep my PS5 to be able to play my physical games, then shit, like, I can't afford that.
Hmm.
You know? So now it looks like I might not want to get a PlayStation 6 either. And it's like, I don't understand this decision because you're just pushing people into Valve at this point. If your consoles are going to be as expensive as a computer and not allow physical media, then people are just going to buy PCs and they're just going to buy games on Steam. And at this point, I haven't...
Switches.
Right, and at this point, I haven't bought any Switch 2 games that are game key cards, but I don't know, you know what? I don't know.
At least you can sell them if you don't like it, or if, you know...
Right, exactly.
Or you can say, hey, Joe, this game is cool, and I'm not playing it right now. Here you go.
Right, so that's the thing. The game key cards, at least you still have the advantage of... Oh, hey, I can resell this, or I can give it to somebody, I can gift it to somebody. It's not a code in a box.
I mean, I'm not advocating for them. I still think they suck, and I will prioritize any game that is not a game key card, but... I mean, this is really... I don't want to go too far into this, because it's a distraction, but that they are... essentially a more honest version of something that was already happening in the Switch ecosystem by a lot of bigger publishers.
Put another way, Sony sure made a better argument for them than Nintendo ever could.
I have a physical copy of Star Wars Jedi Survivor, not realizing when I put the disc into the PS5, it downloaded a 150 gigabyte file.
Hey, fun fact for you. If you buy the PS4 release of that game, the whole game is on the disc.
Wow. Who would have thought?
same thing for the Xbox One release, and both of those came out after the original releases.
And as we said before, it was so odd for Sony to simultaneously say, oh, by the way, you won't be able to buy any digital games on PS3 or Vita soon. Although they have promised that you can still re-download existing purchases, although, again, they can retract that anytime they want.
This is, once again, like, a very strange announcement to pair together. Like, you will only be able to get digital. Also, we are taking away one of our old digital stores. I do not care that they're 20 years old. The optics are bad.
So you may recall that a few months ago I was talking about how our buddy Wheels, he helped me sell one of my vintage consoles and video games a few years ago. And there's some he wanted to keep for himself and he compensated me and that was fine. But, I had found out that he still had my Vita and it was still working. I'm like, can I have my Vita back? So he sold it back to me. And then the same thing happened with the PS3. It's like, can I have my PS3 back? with the Pernie Squad sticker and the 720 gigabyte hard drive. And he said, yes. Yeah. So I don't regret doing that because I was able to go in and re-download all those digital games. And there was some stuff in there I forgot about. But I can tell you, if there comes a point where those digital purchases can't be re-downloaded, then, I would never condone doing this, but maybe hypothetically I hack the system, find some other way to acquire games for it.
I will condone it. Jailbreak you will condone PS3 it. As soon as those store closes.
Right. And that's it. My logic is I bought those games. I paid you. I earned it. I understand the legality of it and I understand their stances. Oh no, you just bought a digital license. But it's like, no, I'm not buying those games again. And I'm not paying you $18 a month to stream PS3 games from the cloud. I'm not fucking doing it. That's my stance there. So going forward, it seems like I'm going to be collecting a lot more Switch 2 games and just be buying digital stuff on Steam, So that's what I'd like to do at this point. And... I'm not paying $900 for PS5 Pro. I'm not paying over $1,000 for PlayStation 6 with no disc drive. At that point, I'll just buy a new graphics card. And I really hope we can fix our tariff situation and our data center situation and get some lower prices. I don't know when or if that's going to happen.
It's nice to dream.
And everything sucks. And maybe I'll change my mind and get the next Xbox console if it's cheaper. But I don't know. I just don't.
Not gonna have a disc drive either.
Yeah, no. Just don't. I don't know what to do right now. I'm trying to reassure myself. I'm trying to tell myself, well, gee, you know, a lot of old PS3 and Wii U games have since been ported and remastered. So I try to tell myself by the time these games are unplayable, they may be playable in a different format. And just, I was telling my brother, I'm like, well, gee, if all of my digital games became unplayable right now, I would still have enough physical games and ROMs to play until I'm dead. you know, like, I have a lot of games to play, but it's still, like, yes, I choose to buy digital games. Like, when I got the PS3, I was so excited. Like, wait a minute, I don't have to buy a disc and put a disc in and go to the store. I can just buy digital. Great. But I still should have that choice, right? If I, mm-hmm. It's one thing to choose to buy digital games because they're dirt cheap or Play Anywhere or whatever the case may be, but, like, I should have that choice. You know,
well,
and everybody should have that choice.
Well, I'm
gonna become a, like, surely this will be ported guy, but for things like Untold Legend.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm just making a gag.
I'm gonna say, like, we should not go quietly into that good night. And I think there's a lot of things. I mean, I don't think we're necessarily going to change any company's mind or anything, but I think it's important now to show that there is a market for physical games, and we as people who enjoy physical games should be partaking in that as much as we can. Like, there's lots of little indie publishers who probably saying make very disheartened and sad statements about this announcement, like I Am 8-Bit Games and others. And, you know, if it comes to a point where they're making Switch games and that's about it, you know, hopefully they can find other avenues. Like, you know, there's lots of indie games they could probably put out on some kind of disc, like a PC disc that people would probably buy to still have that physical release. You know, there's things like Evercade where you can go and buy actual carts. And that's not only retro games. As Fireminer reminded me in chat, there are indie games that release on Evercade as well where you can get an actual cart. And really, I guess what this all circles back is to, we should be supporting more indie games.
Really good plan.
Yeah, support more indie games. Support games that do physical releases. I know Nintendo's not perfect, but, you know, they are supporting physical games, and you should. That's a platform. If you are a physical enjoyer, you should be on a Nintendo platform right now. Even if you are not a big Nintendo fan, that's
going to be the last thing that you can buy physical cartridge.
And. I don't think that there's any near future where they would go all digital, because as we've said, that's a much bigger chunk of their sales. But we
have a bigger chunk of their sales and a bigger deal in the Japanese market.
Yeah, and we have to keep supporting that. And yeah, I don't know. It's as it turns out, as we were probably worried about years ago, giant corporations getting into video games all went to shit, as we probably should have suspected.
Yep.
There's the segue. I'm going to rapid fire the mic.
Yeah. Oh, I just want to point out one thing before you get into that and drag them to the coals. Like I said, you will probably see me on stream playing more games on a Microsoft platform. That is not in any way...
not an endorsement.
An endorsement of Microsoft or their shit. It is simply, and a lot of what I will be buying for that platform will be used. But yes, that is not an endorsement.
It's just the
platform I choose out of two now very shitty platforms. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the hammer finally fell. The actually. Microsoft, in terms of, like, they have been talking about a big reset of the business. Their CEO has been making branding decisions based on Twitter polls. That's insane. And they have announced a bunch of studio closures. Now, there's a lot of reasons that this was kind of inevitable, because a lot of these studio acquisitions were based around when they were like, everything's an Xbox and we just want you to use Game Pass. That was an entire thing that was pretty specifically like that. Like, that was a 2010 strategy that did not pan out. They wanted, apparently they were targeting 100 million active subscriptions per month. Yes. They got to about 35 million and that's the, and then stalled out.
That's probably gone down at this point, I would imagine.
Yes, that is definitely going down, because they are taking things off the service, because like, while they're fine with the service existing, it is no longer the backbone of their business. But they bought a bunch of studios that existed to produce content that did not have to like sell in the traditional sense. It existed as a value add for the existence of game. And now that Game Pass is no longer the core of the company, that goes away. So, Double Fine and Compulsion, who made Double Fine, yeah, they made South of Midnight, they made We Happy Few. They, both of those companies have been spun out, are being spun out into being their own companies. They're being given some amount of funding to give them time to create prototypes that like other publishers might greenlight. And Ninja Theory, who made the Hellblade game and are currently working on Senua, and Undead Labs, who made the State of Decay games, are being sold to as yet unnamed buyers. I'm not sure if that's like it's known who those buyers are, but a few things. One is that like essentially all of these companies will, once they have left Microsoft's aegis, will probably go through their own rounds of layoffs, because there was a degree of financial stability that existed when operating under Microsoft that no longer exists. You need to have a smaller team to make it as a smaller studio. So there's going to be a bunch more layoffs. In addition to these spinouts, Microsoft has entered into some sort of negotiation with the French government to let them divest from Arcane Lyon. I am not precisely certain what that will entail. I think they're just sort of starting the process of either spinning them off or selling them, or closing them, depending upon how that goes. I would suspect that they will probably be sold or spun out in some fashion, just because that will make it easier to deal with the French government in this. But that's also, that studio is also going to be like no longer under Microsoft's ownership. In addition to all of that, they fired 1,600 people working in various roles across all of their continuing to exist studios. So like, huge cuts of like 1 in 4 at places like Bethesda or id. Id apparently lost essentially its entire technology team. That's deranged. That's proof that like proof that whoever made these decisions has genuinely no idea what the strengths of the companies they own are. Mm-hmm. Like, there are a million things you cut at id before you cut tech team. Id Tech Engine is one of the strongest assets that Microsoft has, and it powers like 3 other companies that they still own. Killing the Id Tech team is completely like one of those things where like when you hear it, if you have any idea how these companies are run, you know that like, oh, whoever made that decision has no idea what any of this is. But yeah, that's where we're at. Like, tremendous amounts of layoffs, like 1,600 fired immediately, and it's the promise of 1,600 more at some point over the course of the next year. So if you survive this layoff, or in fact still like playing Russian roulette every day that you stay there. Like, this is one of those things that, like, you see in layoffs. It's like, we'll be doing more layoffs later, more info TBD, and it's like, okay, so you've told me to polish up my resume. Got it. Like, there's zero reason, any loyalty to the company to focus on your job at all, because you should just be finding a new one. That is the only option. And a lot of those people will find a new one that is not in this industry anymore. We will just lose all of that, like, development knowledge with them, because it's like, I can be paid better working literally anywhere else in a job that will be more stable than working. It sucks. It's awful. This level of bloodbath is utterly deranged. Like, it really needs to be understood. Like, what they're currently focusing on is they're going to try to increase the cadence of release for things that do sell well. They want all their stuff that sells well, like Elder Scrolls and Fallout, and, like Doom and Wolfenstein. Like, all those need to come out more often. I don't know why you would then, like, bloodlet id to this extent, why you would bloodlet Bethesda to this extent, why you would, like, that is, those two ideas are at cross purpose with each other and don't make any sense.
You want, like, more Doom, but you get rid of the people that make the engine that makes Doom?
Uh-huh.
You want more Doom and Wolfenstein. We've gotten rid of the team that makes the engine that powers both Doom and Wolfenstein. Please go back and reconsider your thought.
And Indiana Jones, too, right?
Yep. Yeah, because Machine Games was also the Wolfenstein developer.
Well, like, but, yeah. I was reading something like there's a misogynistic thing that companies do where they're struggling, so then they hire a female CEO to essentially just throw her under the bus, and that could be happening.
I don't think, like, I think Asha Sharma's a true believer. Like,
okay.
This isn't, like, obviously, yes, whoever was put in this position was chosen because they are going to have to, like, make ugly decisions here, but also definitely seems to think that this is the path.
Okay.
Ultimately, potentially misogynistic motives in her choice here, but also I think that, like, there's a little too much going on to say this is definitely that's definitely what's happening here, because there's also just a lot of this person has CEO brain. Because, like, the thing that, like, got bandied around as particularly completely fucking insane,
the billion thing
was yes, the, like, this is the most CEO brain thing you can do, and as, like, a, and the most, even in its most charitable reason. Like, in the internal email that outlined all of these cuts, the positive sign-off was that Microsoft has an incredible lineup of, like, IPs and games and people that will, and they want to get, they want to get to the point where they are serving 1 billion players. And, like, there are two ways to do this. And the first thing that I did when I did this was to immediately math out what the most successful console manufacturing was. And, like, you look at, like, Nintendo or Sony, and you're looking at, like, I think the higher score highest score in terms of hardware sales across existence as a, like, video game hardware manufacturing concern goes is 750 million across decades. So, like, nah. Like, you know, obviously the actual literal of that number is not only impossible, but laughably impossible. That, like, 1 billion people might handle an Xbox over the course of a year. And that's still being and you know, an Xbox or play AP. That's the only way to get close to that number. Genuinely deranged. You know, I've seen people interpret that number like it really just ends up depending upon what level of stupid do you think that the person who said it is? Like, do you think that they're just saying that to essentially justify, well, we failed to hit targets, so we're killing more things? Or do you think that they're just that stupid? Between things like the id thing and some of the other stuff, and the fact that, like, her previous position was, like, head of AI? No, I think she might just be that dumb. Hard to say. Might be playing dumb, hard to say.
Yeah.
But, like, I guess I will pull up, like, at some point it doesn't matter if you're pretending to be stupid if it's the way that all of your decisions get made. But yeah. So, yeah, this was entirely avoidable. This was the product of 10 years of doubling down on bad bets. Like, we definitely need to properly assign blame that, like, some kind of bloodletting was going to happen in the face of, like, the previous, like, Xbox regime, Phil Spencer's, like, tenure going on a spending spree in the hopes that, like, doubling down over and over on Game Pass would someday turn it into Netflix, and that failing. At the same time, good lord, this is, like, you know, throw, also remember to throw shit at Satya Nadella, who decided that, like, the Microsoft is an AI company now because CEOs are just absolutely enamored of the robot that won't tell them no. Just an incredible amount of blame to go around, an incredible number of loathsome people being paid ungodly amount of money. So yeah, really makes you feel great about the whole industry.
FireRunner has some more stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to read the stuff relevant to what we were just talking about first, and then we'll circle back to some other stuff. Look at it. Microsoft just sold Undead Labs even as they are still developing State of Decay 3. There were 3 State of Decays? Okay.
Yeah.
It just came out 6 years ago, my dude.
Yeah, you just talked about the idea the company shouldn't... Tied to the idea of if you can't sell one more copy with the idea of lost profit, there's an argument about putting games in deep discount often. I think this is a question from earlier. Games deep discount often that's the only way you can get people with not a lot of money to buy. How much do publishers care about how many people actually pay full price for the games, and does things like de novo have an effect on that aspect?
Some people will not buy a game if it has de novo.
I think that number is smaller than the number of people who will not end up... Who will, like... Well, I'm not saying necessarily that it's smaller, but it's also, like... It's probably balanced out by the number of people that are like, well, fuck, there's no crack for it, I guess I'll buy.
Yeah.
Because, like, And this is always fuzzy, this is always very, like... hard to falsify one way or the other. Definitely got friends who, like, used to, like, pirate a lot of new PC releases, but now that de novo is on most major new releases, they end up just grudgingly buying them. Like, I'm not gonna pretend I don't know people that are like that. But, yeah, like, it's a whole thing. Like, all of this is vibes. All this is vibes. Like, the most damning numbers we ever got for how much piracy ever affected basically anything was just watching DS games getting localized. R4 cartridges destroyed them. But, yeah. Okay, continue down the list.
Okay, Let's look at the fact that my son. Let's look at the fact that Microsoft sold on devs. How many studios have gotten a worse deal by having been acquired by Microsoft and then having to suffer Game Pass and terrible management?
Well, there's like. So there's like an unfortunate side of this, which is a number of studios that Microsoft acquired that were like small scale that got put on like Game Pass duty, like Double Fine, might have probably already shut down by now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that's fucked, is that like, yeah, it sucks. I hate them. I hate them for killing it. But also, like, you know, Double Fine, Pulsion, like, you know, I don't think South of Midnight ends up happening. I think that, like, We Happy Few, and it's, like, disastrous launch, and it's, like, deeply questionable story decisions, maybe ends up, like, killing that studio before a South of Midnight ever materializes. Like, there's so much, like, that's grim about being an independent studio and independent studio in the current age, where, like, games cost so much to make, like, that, and publishers are so risk averse, like, you know, bear in mind, it took Double Fine like 15 years to find someone to find a like any world where they could get Psychonauts 2 funded, a cult classic that had like an obvious market to exist, and it just took decades of financial wrangling to make that game happen. Like, you know, I ultimately, Microsoft's the one that swings the axe, but also there's only so much that can be done to make a studio like Double Fine survive on its own. Like, and that's why we're going to see it shrink again. Like, it's going to shrink, it's going to make smaller games. Like, that's just how it'll have to be.
Okay, he's... FireRunner, yes, you've asked this question 3 times. I will read it now. And your argument about not competing with anything, someone from Compile said that they just didn't want to make GG Aleste 3 a standalone release because it was arguably the biggest and only thing that drew people to the Aleste collection. I don't know what any of these things are except Compile.
Reading. I'll explain it.
We're not condemned for being anti-consumer gatekeeping. What do you think about this?
So, like, let me slowly pull, unspool this so that Wheels can understand what the hell he just read. Aleste is an old, like, shooter franchise that was, like, released in English under a multitude of different titles with names like Power Strike, Musha, Robo Aleste. Right. Those games came out under a multitude of different names. They are beloved by Compile. Compile is beloved among, like, shoot-'em-up fans of that era for making, like, really high-quality ones, the Aleste franchise being big one. There is a, like, one of the, like, Game Gear games, GG Aleste, the Aleste 2, they apparently made a GG Aleste 3 and added it to the Aleste collection. And ultimately, there is, like, the argument that FireMiner is making, it sounds like, again, I'm not the one looking at it because phone, but it sounds like the argument is, why would this not be considered anti-consumer, given that, like, they require you to purchase the Aleste collection in order to get access to GG Aleste 3? And what I would say is, like, no, because Aleste fans are a small group that are probably perfectly happy to purchase compilations of Aleste games. Really is what comes down to it. Like, the kind of person that's gonna, like, start yelling about being anti-consumer because they can't purchase every game in a collection individually is probably not the kind of person who cares about Aleste games. It'd be like complaining that I can't purchase R-Type 2 Operation Bitter Chocolate without purchasing R-Type Command 1 in that collection. Like, yeah, I could make that argument, but, like, you know, it's whatever, man. Like, if I'm enough of a sicko to want our Type 2 Operation Bitter Chocolate, I probably want our Type 2 Mant 1.
Well, it's like that weird Marvel Spider-Man, or that Marvel collection, or X-Men collection, with the, you know, Arcade's Revenge on it. Yeah, it's like, dreadful. I really want to play the X-Men arcade game, and I guess if that's the only way to buy it with all that other crap, then sure, you know.
Time to own Venom and Spider-Man, Separation Anxiety.
I ordered that collection.
No, you did.
Games. Yes, I did.
You a fool.
I know. I know.
You got fleeced. I would have held out for Sega Spider-Man in the arcade. yeah.
I wanted Maximum Carnage, goddammit.
Even worse. but yeah, like, I think ultimately, like, it's also down to a lot of the people that, like, shout about, like, the problem is that, like, something being anti-consumer is ultimately not, like, a mean critique most of the time, because, like, you could make an argument that anything that is not part of giving me the object for free is anti-consumer. And then I could honestly probably coherently make an argument that giving me something for free is anti-consumer if I don't want it, which is what I would probably make about like a U2 album or something. But hey, remember when that happened?
Yeah, I removed it from my library.
Oh god. Oh god.
But yeah, like the term is not super meaningful. It's hyper malleable. It just basically refers to the idea. Like, I wasn't given the exact option I wanted, and, like, well, that's everything. Yes, if you could find someone who was willing to advance the argument, you could probably do that, but you would have to find someone who was both, like, deep in the tank for Aless, and also, ready to advance that argument to, like, the five other people that are deep in the tank for Aless. Okay, one more and then we gotta call it quits. I'm tired.
Okay, back when I still played Destiny 2, Destiny players' favorite debate was to argue if the game had gotten enough contents and whether that amount of contents was justified given the game's profitability.
We find out that it wasn't very profitable, apparently.
Yes. We all know about Bungie and Sony's mismanagement, but the more I look into it, the more I think that the seasonal model and expectation it creates might be more costly for developers in the long run than just making DLC. It's a lot to unpack here. Bungie's mismanagement predates Sony by a lot.
They were almost bankrupt.
Yeah. I don't know why Sony bought Bungie, and I don't think they've run them particularly well, but I don't think we can actually put a lot of this on Sony. And but going to your question, I perfectly understand what you're saying, and I can see how this potentially is kind of what ultimately killed the game, because it was a game that is expensive to make content for. And you know, I've talked a lot about how this game could keep going because look at all these old MMOs that keep going, and I guarantee you, without even looking into anything, that it is a lot easier to make constant content,
for EverQuest.
For like EverQuest or World of Warcraft or even Final Fantasy 14 than it is to make for Destiny. Not just because of, you know, it's their own engine and they probably, even after all these years, don't have the best tools. It is just a lot harder to make constant content for a game that moves that fast. Like
how Sonic levels.
Like that. Yes.
How Sonic levels are like perfectly designed to fuck you over as you scale them up.
I think the perfect model, if they were going to keep doing this way, was how they did it with Destiny 1. It was no seasonal model, just some expansions. And yes, people said, there's not a lot here, but when you're paying, when you're not paying a monthly when you're not paying a monthly fee, you're just paying for the expansion. I think it's reasonable, but that you're going to take a break at some point until the next expansion comes out. Like, I think the expectations that Destiny and its constant content created were dramatically unsustainable, and I think a lot of the facts that are coming to light after the end of Destiny 2 kind of back that up. And you know, it's unfortunate because it's not the fault of the developers, because I will never get off this hill that what they created was an incredible, if you take into account Destiny 1, like 12 years of content. But it was not sustainable. And I think the seasonal stuff just did not work. Like, if you go and look at the games that have seasons, it's mostly like competitive multiplayer shooters and stuff like that, where you're not like having to create all these complicated story cutscenes and all this other stuff all the time. Like an Overwatch season, it's new skins, maybe a new character, possibly a new map, maybe some balancing changes. That's it.
Yeah, I want to say
a Destiny season.
I want to say that going forward, I think Capcom said that new Street Fighter VI characters would not be getting World Tour story content. You know, because right now, like with Ingrid, for instance, I had to go into the World Tour mode and find her, ask her to be my mentor, and then do a little quest, and it was fun. And then you raise their approval level, you know, to get their alternate costume. So I think Capcom said they're not doing that anymore, but they do now have an Avatar arcade mode where you can level them up and get their costume. So that's good, at least.
Honestly, I think that's fine. I'm kind of, you listen to the show, you know, I play a lot of these things. There's too many. It's just too many. Yeah. And right. I think if there's going to be more Destiny in the future, I don't think they should do another live service game. I don't think that's the future of the franchise. I think there's a lot of space for like a RPG shooter with co-op, you know, like I've talked about this before, like a Borderlands type game. Not, I don't mean the humor. I don't even necessarily mean the type of loot they do. I just mean like that. Here's your campaign. Here's some DLC. And that's it.
I thought that was a good business model.
And there'll be a new game in a few years.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would work amazingly for Destiny, and people would, like, you know, grind that game with all the characters, you know, try and get the best loot and stuff like that. And they could do that every few years. And I think that can be a wonderful franchise. Is that one of the supposed pitch games at the remains of Bungie at this point? Who the hell knows? I'm not going to hold my breath, but you know, that's
and wait, I need to go to bed. Let's play this shit.
Wants to go first.
Hold on, Fireman was just saying, Captain's one of the five highest paid game series in Japan. Capcom fans still think they have difficulty hiring more people, and that the drought of content for games like Monster Hunter Wilds and Street Fighter 6 come down to have not enough animators and programmers. Or maybe they know not to just flood the market with endless content.
Yeah, don't flood the market, and like, honestly, you want 12, like, as much as I would like a faster cadence of SF6 characters, you don't want more than, like, six or seven per year, or else games that just open. And Wilds is busy trying to rebuild its engine because it runs like shit.
Yeah, and it's also a garbage game. This has been a depressing episode. I want to try and end on a positive note, and that if you love games, there are many.
Never been more games to love.
There's never been more games to love. And I think, especially in times like this, where we're all on social media drowning in whatever the bad news of the day is, it's important to go out there and find these games. Find cool games. If you like physical games, go check out Evercade. Go check out, you know, whoever's making physical games. There's probably others I don't even know about. Find things to love. Don't sit there and be depressed by all this news. There's plenty of good stuff out there. You'll find plenty of joy, even if it's not from, you know, companies you may have purchased from the past. Maybe there's a future where none of us are playing anything on PlayStation or Xbox. Maybe they're gone. Who the hell knows? But games will continue on, and I encourage people to please, please, as negative as we are on this, please find things to enjoy, because there's so much to enjoy about life, and especially lots of games out there. Okay, let's get to the plugs.
You were unable to escape Gaijin's book plugs, but we will once again remind you to go check Amazon, Kindle, and Kindle Unlimited for all these and more books you want to read, but please support a local indie author. Joe, tell us about you.
Okay, so currently for the past, 2.5 hours, I've been live streaming on the RP Gamer channel, and I was playing various things, but basically that's where you can find me, on twitch.tv/RPGamer. So it is JRPG July, so I've been streaming Kingdom Hearts on Tuesday and Thursday nights from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. thereabouts. So I've been saying for years that I wanted to get into that series, and yeah, a long time ago I walked into GameStop one day, they had Kingdom Hearts 3 Special Edition with steelbook case and everything for like $18. I'm like, sure, I'd be a fool not to buy that. And then I thought, wait a second, maybe I should play the first three games. It's like, well, there's actually 9 games that came out before that, and I did end up getting on PS4.
Conveniently condensed.
Right, and of course I didn't understand the fucking titles and the numbering system, but I did end up getting the 1.5 plus 2.5 HD Remix Collection on PS4. So that's, I started the first game, and we're going to see how far I can get throughout the month, and then I'll decide if I want to continue streaming those games.
Ask me if you need any advice, I can help.
Yep, I'll let you know, and these are old games, so they don't tell you where to go. They don't tell you what to do. There's no map, so you talk to NPCs, you open doors, close doors, and try to get cutscenes to trigger. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is old school, all right. So that's what I'll be streaming. And you can also find me on Blue Sky and YouTube under Smoke and Joe Gamer. So I got a whole bunch of videos there, and I post things that I think are funny, but I don't always get a lot of attention, and I don't know. And that's fine. So, no, you can follow me on Blue Sky and YouTube, and you can chat with us on Discord. You can join the server. Just follow the rules and don't get into fights with people who can ban you, because they will.
You can get into fights with me if you want. I won't ban you.
Yeah. I don't ban people. I actually, there was somebody they were talking about banning, and I'm like, no, don't do that. And then they didn't. And it was nice. So I do have some sway, but depending on the situation, I might not be able to protect you. And that's also where you can ask us questions, but that's the bit that Dave likes to do, so you can go ahead and explain where they can ask us questions.
Ask us questions in the comments section or this very episode on the RP Gamer website, or you can ask us questions during the stream if you catch us. Typically that's on rpgamer.tv/rpgamer or twitch.tv/askwheels. Where you can join people like Dear Front Fireminer in asking questions as we speak, and we try to break our terrible rambles long enough to answer them. You can also ask us questions in the RP Gamer Discord, which we've already mentioned, but you can get there by going to the community tab on RP Gamer. There's a forever link there. Get yourself banned. But if you ask questions in the podcast section, we try to check. Otherwise, I think that wraps it up for us. See you, Space Cowboy.
See you.
See ya.
the land we call our home. Push to keep the dark from coming. Feel the weight of what we owe. This, the song of sons and daughters, hide the heart of who we are. Making peace to build a future, strong, united, working till we fall. The air and water flowing hard, the land we call our home. Push to keep the dark from